This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome. Good night. This is Dr. D. Archer. We're on live on Guardian Radio with me, Dr. D. Archer. The doctor is in. Tonight, we have a really interesting conversation. The first part of our show, we are going to be talking to some students at the University of the Bahamas. We're going to be talking about the vaccine mandate was put out, what the students think and how they're dealing with it. There have been some changes since, so we'll just get their views on how they're dealing with that, and just the general sentiment about the entire situation. We wanna thank a sponsor tonight, Medical Concierge Services. Of course, that's where you can find me all 5 days a week. We are located at 72 Collins Avenue in the Heart Center building. It's the same place as the Breast Center. And our number is 326-1521. Also our WhatsApp, 429-4880. For those of you who are looking to sign up for NHI, or if you're looking for a new family physician, we have another doctor there as well, so you can come and sign up with us and get the best care available. We also do house calls, so if you have someone at home and you need them to be seen and in this time, especially with everything that's happening with COVID, just give us a call. Check out our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. So I want to thank the show. We have quite a few guests in here, four of you. So I'll start with the lady who I was able to contact. So that's Ms. Astronique Jones. We have Devante Hanna, Gabriel Barnett, and Deja Dorset. Guys, welcome to the show. You can unmute your mics.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, great, guys. All right, for those of you online who are saying I'm very low, I'm just going to try to turn that up as much as possible. I hope that's better. For some reason, I'm getting feedback tonight. Okay. Having some issues online with that. All right. Not sure what's happening with the online feed. Okay. Somehow it's gone away now. So sorry about that, everyone. But I hope that you can hear now. And so you guys just speak up because I'm also on Facebook on live on the phone. So they're kind of listening in. A few weeks ago, basically, we saw, we know everything that's happening with COVID. There have been pushes for mandates all over the world. A lot of people are pushing back. Some people are comfortable with it. We've seen a few businesses that have tried to implement it. Bahamians have not been too happy about it, but the University of the Bahamas, which my alma mater actually went there, did put out a policy just before school started where they were requiring vaccination. I think there have been some changes. We'll talk about that afterwards. But obviously there was some kind of pushback or some kind of, I just want to know, what did you guys think when this first happened, and was it discussed with the student body prior to the policy going up?
Okay, so I guess I'll go. Firstly, thank you so much for having us on the show, Dr. Archer, and good night, Bahamas. So my name is Devontae Hanna, and we learned about this policy, I think it was the week that school actually opened. So I think school opened that Friday, and then we got the policy the following Monday or Tuesday. And we were outraged, to say the least, because, you know, we as the Student Government Association, we are allowed to have meetings with the Administrative Council. In those meetings, the president would have made mention of this policy, but he told us it wasn't going to come into effect anytime soon, or at least not for the immediate future. So we gave our concerns, we gave our recommendations to the policy, but those weren't seen in the policy itself. So of course we just felt, you know, kind of disenfranchised. We felt as if they are making these big decisions for the students and not considering the concerns of the students, which we thought was just outrageous, you know? And the Student Government Association, we have no position on whether you should or shouldn't take the vaccine. What we are advocates for is for education, we want students to realize and understand that it is up to their free choice. You know, we have no official stance. And of course, we are certainly against mandatory vaccinations, given all that is happening around the world.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because that is the center of learning. They should be on top of all of the literature that's happening. And don't worry, it's happening in various different areas as well. You know, you guys seem to be aware of what's happening and what's out there. What is your biggest concern about having a mandatory vaccination policy? And why do you think that they went from, you know, discussing it with you, saying it's, you know, it's not happening, and it's happening? I don't know. One of the ladies, you guys can jump in.
Okay. Good night. My name is Gabrielle Barnett. I see the mandatory vaccination as an issue for university students, primarily because, for one, we have a lot of students who don't have access to personal laptops and devices. Throughout the pandemic, the university has been open for students to go into the labs. And so for them to find additional funding to go on campus if they wish not to take the vaccine was a problem that a lot of students would have shared. Also, we, in one of the meetings that we would have had with administrative, we would have also mentioned using this semester as a means of educating the populace. Like you mentioned earlier, this is a center for learning. And so what we as the Student Government Association wanted to do was to have an educational campaign this semester, get feedback from the students on their views, especially now that we have other vaccines, but we don't just have the AstraZeneca now, and see what their thoughts are that we can bring back to the board and say, hey, based off of the information that we would have gathered, we've analyzed it, and this is what we recommend moving forward. However, we didn't have the opportunity to do that. And so, like Devontae said, it leads to students disenfranchised, especially students who, for various labs, would actually have to go on campus twice a week, maybe three times a week. They're not able to complete their courses or whatever field studies they may have to do because of this mandate.
With such a small portion of the population actually vaccinated, and your population being probably one of the very lowest risk groups for any kind of adverse COVID issues, why do you think this policy was just kind of put on you and was, you know, so stringent? Atharneek, if you want to get in there. Atharneek, are you there? Deja?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, sure.
I feel as if this agenda was pushed for underground reason that they are not willing to tell us about. Because when we first heard about the policy, like Devontae said, they told us after school had already started, and then they said, okay, we need this deadline to be September 30th. We can't adjust this. Under no circumstance are we going to push this. So I feel as if there is some agenda that they're not willing to tell us about, because we all express that even if you make it mandatory, which we don't stand for, no one would be able to be fully vaccinated in time for the 30th, regardless of which method. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, like Gabrielle said, a lot of funding is going to be needed for these students. For example, the people on the residential campus in the dorms, how are we going to accommodate those who live on campus who are going to require a test every three days, which is basically twice a week? So I personally feel as if the Administrative Council has this big plan for the university that they're not willing to tell anyone, and it's causing a lot of uproar.
Wow, it's really, really interesting. Is it that this is the normal way that you communicate with the university, or is this just something out of the blue that's really unexpected? Have you always had a cordial relationship, students, faculty, that type of thing?
Well, in our capacity as a Student Government Association, we have monthly meetings with the entire Administrative Council, and that is from the president and all of the other vice presidents. But what we understand is that this decision actually came down from the Board of Trustees. And SGA doesn't really have a relationship per se with the Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. However, there is a student trustee that represents the voice of all students. But from what I understand, the student was also kind of shortchanged in terms of they had no knowledge of what was happening as well.
Wow, that's really interesting for them to do that in that particular way. And it's kind of, you know, the way that was done. What is the body doing about it? Are you checking with your members to see how they feel? Have you sent anything back? I see there seems to be a slight adjustment. I looked at the website for UB and it's saying 5 days, every 5 days instead of every 3 days, which I thought 3 days was quite a bit. And are the students having to pay for these tests?
Recently, we have made a statement letting the student body and faculty know where our stance was as the student government. We did let everyone know that we were not prepared for something as big as this, because as our job to be the representative of the students, of course, we would have warned them in advance for a bomb as big as that. But recently in the new policy, they said that for the students who are required to come on campus, such as the culinary and nursing majors and people who live in the dorms, their fees would be covered for them, if I'm not mistaken. So it is an adjustment that is an improvement, but it is still not to the extent we want it to be.
Are a lot of your classes currently online? Is it requiring that a lot of people come on campus? And if they were on campus during the summer, what do you think has shifted to create this problem or this need now?
Originally, most of our classes were virtual. Only people who do a lot of practical work, like the culinary majors, the nursing majors, people who have to do labs, they would come on campus. And then the people who do not have access to internet or devices, they would come on campus to use the internet cafe or to go to the library to print and things like that. But I feel as if maybe this policy was made because of the recent surge in cases. Though, even though that is the case, we should encourage people to just get tested regularly or social distance or know the proper procedures to take to combat COVID-19 rather than pushing everyone to get vaccinated, because not everyone may want to do that. Vaccines are fairly new worldwide. They've been here for less than a year. And so pushing this agenda on people it just seems a bit suspicious.
And I also wanted to kind of piggyback off of Deja. You know, we've been remote since the spring of 2020. and is now going on spring 2022. So that would have been 2 years at the university would have lost with students on campus. A lot of students have still not adjusted to that model of learning as yet. And even, you know, we're having some issues with even examinations and testing and all that, because usually students can sit in the class and they can do it, but now you have all of this entire virtual situation where it opens the door for even cheating, not saying that any student is doing that. But I think the policy actually came at a time out of the need of students actually getting back on campus. And do we really agree with the way it was done? Not necessarily, but I guess we can understand.
Is this just a lack of them putting together the proper policy? Because if, you know, we've been doing this for over a year. We've talked about living with COVID. I'm a doctor. I've been saying from the very beginning that this is going to be endemic, which means that, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. It is a virus. It mutates. It changes. And just like the flu, after a while, we had to get used to living with it. Do you think this is just a kind of a lack of policy on being able to, hey, adjust to this? And put the things in place that would keep people safe without having to mandate, like you say, a vaccine that's very, very new. Gabrielle, you look like you want to jump in there.
Yes. I find it to be quite contradictory, because since we've been primarily virtual university, but have sent out surveys to both faculty and staff about their views about coming on campus. And prior to the start of the fall 2021 semester, the university sent out an email saying that that classes that had a certain number and low 15 and lower, they would have had the opportunity to come on campus. So if I had a class of 10 students, they would have had the opportunity to come on campus compared to much larger classes. So it's quite contradictory that it appeared as if we were trying to transition back on campus, and a lot of students were pro going back on campus. And then for them to implement a policy like this is kind of contradictory in terms of whether they want students to be on campus or not.
Yeah, you're quite right in the sense that, you know, sounds like you were planning, there were things in place, people had made suggestions, and there was something kind of outlined to make that all happen, and there just seemed to be a fix. As Deja said, there seems to be some other reason behind it. Do you think they've been responsive? Have you guys made new recommendations? And what's your group going to do moving forward if they kind of stay with this and it becomes an inconvenience for a lot of students?
Well, since the release of the policy, we've been making our recommendations. So we would have released a statement letting them know that, hey, we understand that we need to get back on campus. We understand the urgency in it all. But you can't just drop a bomb on students, right? In terms of the testing policy that they had, where students would have to take the test every 3 days, it raised concern for those students that have no other option but to go on campus for their courses. It also raised the issue of those students that live on campus. And I think one of the students that lives in the residential halls, he said the lowest that they could find tests for was about $33. And they would have had to actually pay that cost twice a week. And then here is another issue that says, you know, I live on campus. This is my home. I am paying for COVID-19 tests to be home, and I'm literally not going anywhere else because I have no classes on campus. I'm not doing anything. If I'm going anywhere, it's to the food store or to do something very small, and I'm coming right back. And we told the university in our statement that we cannot stand for this issue. And I think what also helped it was that members from UTEP would have joined us, the BPSU, they would have joined in the fight, and they actually changed the requirements. As students are tested every 5 days, and they are also, the university is also covering the cost of that. Now, will we see any changes with this vaccination policy? Because it now comes into effect in a matter of days, right? And since then, a lot of students still wouldn't have been able to become fully vaccinated, as I think Deja would have said before.
Right. And the idea is that some people are just not going to get vaccinated. They're not interested in getting vaccinated. And also, I would say that your group is a very low risk group. So there's a lot of different studies from a medical point of view across the world, this whole idea of vaccinating young people, whether the risk is worth it. And like you say, it's very early on. We're still looking at a lot of data that's coming out. And so I really commend you young people for actually kind of thinking about the situation, being able to come up with your own analysis and providing your thoughts on that. Just in case anyone wants to jump in before we kind of wrap up, 325-4316, 325-4259. For those who have any questions and for those of you who are online, we're here with Gabrielle Barnett, Devante Hanna, and Deja Dorsett. Just talking about the whole situation at the University of the Bahamas, it seems very interesting that this actually was to happen. And what would you think the perfect or the best policy would be in regards of what you would like to see the policy look like?
Well, you can go ahead, Deja.
Deja, okay. And then Devante, you can jump back in.
Okay. I personally believe that if they do want to create more safety measures for the campus, we need to install more sanitizing stations. We should make sure there are checkpoints for people to check our temperatures, and we need to ensure that everyone is wearing masks, because forcing people to find money that they may not have is not the solution, and it most definitely is not a quick fix. If they really and truly do want people to be safe, they would enforce it by making sure that they at least social distance and wear their masks and stay sanitized.
Devante?
Ideally, for me, I think the policy should, of course, not be mandatory vaccinations, at least not yet, right? No governments have made vaccinations mandatory. Well, the COVID-19 vaccination mandatory, not here in the Bahamas at least. And so what should have been done and what we recommended is some educational programming for students to actually know about this vaccine, know what is in this vaccine, because even though we're university students, there's still a lot of things that we may and may not do or may and may not understand. And so I felt the university should have played an integral role in certainly having a vaccination or being a part of a vaccination education platform or campaign nationally, instead of just, you know, at the university level. Obviously, we need to get back on campus. There needs to be some sort of action on campus. I know we've lost the last two graduation ceremonies to COVID-19. And so these are a lot of students. You're going to have like students that entered university in 2020. They're not going to have a chance to ever go on campus if we don't find a way to sensibly do this, you know. And so I'm for the testing. I'm for the sanitization. I agree with Deja that needs to be more sanitization spots on campus. We need to do a lot more deep cleaning. All of these stuff should have been thought of from the onset of the pandemic. And I think we, as a people, we really underestimated how long we would be in this pandemic. And a lot of times we're saying we're leaning on the advice of health officials, and health officials have said, you know, we're going to be in this probably until 2023, 2024. So it's now time for us to actually learn how to coexist with this virus.
Yeah. I think the problem with that all is there are two schools of thought on this. There's persons like, I agree with you guys. We learn to live with it. We cope with it and we deal with it. And then there's the people who are just like, you know, if we don't vaccinate everybody, then we'll never go back. And I think that's where, you know, if you look at what's happening in different parts of the world, that there's that struggle going on. There's been quite a few protests over the world over this exact same issue. Even countries where they have been highly vaccinated, they still try to do mandates regardless. And so I think, you know, sometimes in our country, we kind of follow what we see other places without contextualizing how does that affect our own people and how we respond to that and what would be best for us. And so we can take lessons from what we're seeing elsewhere to not go through that struggle and to actually develop for ourselves. And I think UB should be really a pool of thought where these innovative ideas would be coming we could look to them for this kind of stuff instead of this kind of copy and paste policy that we're seeing in places around the world. And they're having a lot of pushback. And even places where there isn't a lot of pushback, it seems like the policies continue to roll out until people are just upset. Gabrielle, everybody's kind of given their kind of insight of what they want to see. Let me just hear from you about your thoughts on all of that.
Not a problem. And I agree wholeheartedly. This is the University of the Bahamas, and we should be leading the vaccination education campaign and informing and educating the populace of what's going on. This is a time where we should be using our students, using the student nurses. I know that earlier in the year, they had issues about going into the hospitals and being able to finish their practicums. They should be able to be spokespersons and discuss what they have learned and what they have experienced being in the hospitals. This is the time where we should be utilizing the skills that we're learning in university to not only engage in public speaking, but also being innovative and finding ideas as to how we should go about handling this situation. For the most part, I personally agreed with going back on campus in some sort of hybrid solution. I felt like the what they offered was fine, where you had 15 and less were able to have the opportunity to go on campus. I don't know why that has changed, but I definitely feel that as young persons, as the future leaders in this country, this would have been the time for the university to engage us in dialogue, in conversation, and asking us our opinions, our recommendations, and really trying to come to some sort of compromise.
Yeah, exactly. You know, college is really a place of critical learning, and this is a time for young people to kind of find themselves and become adults and find their voice. As a graduate of a university, well, at the time, COB, I don't want to say my age, but College of the Bahamas at the time, you know, I that was a platform for me as I went off to university, other places. And when I was in university, you know, it was really big to be able to speak your opinion and give your advice. We had really good professors who were open to ideas and everything. Do you think that's a cultural shift, or this is very specific to what's happening with this particular issue with the mandates?
I feel as if this is a shift of events that we're not used to, because usually, like you said, the students are not afraid to speak up. We will email whoever we need to. We will confront whoever we need to. But with this type of situation, we weren't even given the opportunity to have a voice to begin with, because the policy was already finalized before they asked us our feedback. Because at first they made it seem as if it was just something that's on the table for us to discuss about. And after we, as the student representatives, gave our opinions, they were like, okay, well, the policy is still going to drop anyway, just letting you know that it's going to happen. So I feel as if the student voices were really stifled this time, and we most definitely do not appreciate it.
All right, 322-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. We have a comment from All Online from Claudette Grant. She says, my thing is the vaccine should be choice. I think it is. I think it's not right to force the vaccine on no one. I think that is wrong. So you're having people that definitely agree with that stance. And I also am an advocate for choice. The way that I was trained is it's very patient-centered. And so patients should have informed consent. They should have their questions answered. If all those questions can be answered, or if they feel uncomfortable for any reason, then you do not go ahead and force anything on anyone. And I hope that continues. You say the deadline is coming up. You see that a lot of students may not be able to fulfill all of this, even with the 5 days a week. What do you guys have intentions to do? Are you going to, you know, stick with what you believe? Are you going to organize? Do you have more meetings set up with the authorities to speak more about it? Are they open to that?
Well, we do have another meeting that is set, I think, in another, it's actually going to be in another 2 weeks with the Administrative Council. But, you know, obviously this final, well, this mandate of vaccinations will take effect on the 30th, and our meeting will actually be after that. But we've been informed through the grapevine, kind of off the record almost, that there will be some changes to the policy. However, we don't know what that policy, what that'll look like. In conversation with the president of UTEP, he would have said that he would have gotten some word that it will change as well. And so I think right now we're being patient, but we're also going to put the hammer down to let them know that we will not stand for this, you know. And if that means we're going to have to stand in front of block the entrance of UB, then we'll have to do that. If that means we're going to have to go to the media, in like this case, then we're going to have to do that. But I think what needs to happen moving forward is that the university just needs to understand that you cannot make these big decisions without the caring, the concerns of students.
Okay, very, very kind of interesting. Okay, I did not mean to join. I missed and joined my own Zoom, so I'm just gonna leave that so I can get back. Sorry for those of you who are online, that would have come off for you. I'm just gonna reload with what's going on. So you guys just give me a minute to just get back live. So we got cut off a little bit. I went on there live a bit. But that sounds like a pretty good plan in terms of just kind of knowing what you're going to do and being able to go through that. But I think I wish you guys really good luck with this, because I think this is extremely important. And I think as this just loads back up, sorry guys, I'm back online for those of you who were watching online. But I think this is extremely important, and this will set precedent for a lot of things. So I want you guys to definitely to hold strong with this, and don't let anyone intimidate you. The youth, you guys are basically the future, and I'm actually feel really, really good that you guys are willing to have a strong opinion. You're able to articulate your thoughts on this. You've obviously thought about it. You've spoken with the people that, you know, you're representing. And I think that you guys are doing an excellent job in terms of all of that. So I'm just going to go around and let you guys give a few final thoughts, what you really want the public to know, because it's important the public knows your point of view and where you stand and what you want. So just starting with Gabriel, just kind of summarize your thoughts, what you want people to get out of this, and what you want as your end result.
Okay, not a problem. So in the end, we want to be included in the decision-making process. I think first and foremost, that's very substantial. The way that they went about implementing this policy was not right. It kind of took us aback, considering the fact that we had just recently had a meeting with them talking about it, as Devontae said, and then for them to still go ahead and push out this policy, it was very short-sighted. We were disenfranchised, and so we had to move quickly. My end thoughts is that we reached some sort of compromise to allow students and faculty to have the option of whether or not they want to be vaccinated, like we discussed throughout the entire conversation. We're all pro-choice. We want persons to be well-educated on the matter, so definitely an educational campaign we would love to spearhead as the university, not only for faculty and staff, but generally for the entire populace, is something that we would love to do, just to show that, hey, we as young people, we have understanding of what's going on. We're engaged. We're trying to reach out. You know, we are the future leaders of this country. And so by us taking these first steps, we're making it known that we want our voices to be heard, and we are going to ensure that our voices are heard, that we have a seat at the table, and that
we can engage in conversation.
Deja, your thoughts?
Yes. So overall, my final thoughts for the policy is it still needs to be tweaked. It still needs to be for the betterment of the students and not just for the Board of Trustees. Because like Gabriel said, we are all for choice. We want to encourage safety in this pandemic, but nonetheless, every decision that we make regarding the pandemic is solely choice. We should not force anyone, student or faculty, to become vaccinated just because that is what our upper heads want us to do. And yeah, that's basically my final thoughts on it.
Okay, Devonte.
Yes, and I can't help but to just echo the sentiments of Gabri and Deja, you know, and I also just bring up the point that we need to be creative. We need to, you know, we are following other universities, but we also need to look and see what is applicable to us in the Bahamas, you know, and that is how we will find out or realize a true way to return on campus. And so I just encourage all of the powers that be just to do that, be creative. That is what we've been pushing since the start of this pandemic. So, and that's it for me.
Yeah, I really think, you know, if we can have an election during in the middle of a pandemic, I think there are possibilities to do whatever we want to do. If we put our minds together, if we're creative with it, we're innovative with it. I think instead of being followers, the Bahamas has an opportunity as a small nation to be kind of a guiding light to the world. You know, our possibilities are endless. Just before you go, guys, what are your majors? I'm just curious to know, you know, where these great thinking minds are going.
Okay, I am a fourth year public administration student.
Great.
I am a senior media journalism and music minor.
I am a second year accounting major.
All right, you guys are very diverse. I'm really glad to see that. And I think you guys did a great job. I totally support you. I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there support you as well. I also support choice, you know, and so I think education is definitely the key and you let people choose. And there's various ways that you can get back that education. Being on campus is really, really important to your experience. And I think there's ways of doing that, whether it just be like spreading people out, you know, making classes a bit smaller. But I think that that can be accomplished. And if you keep it up, you're going to accomplish what you're trying to do. So I want to thank you guys for coming out tonight.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, awesome to have you. I love to have young people involved.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for engaging us in meaningful conversation.
Definitely. These are the voices that we need to hear. And if you guys have any other issues you want to talk about, you know, feel free to reach out to me, you know, through Athlonique or even get my number. You know, I'm very open to that. I'm very open to free speech and just kind of, you know, being able to dialogue in that level. And I think if we don't start engaging people from all levels of our society, including our young people, our people who are getting our education, you know, we're going to end up with more of the same kind of quality of thinking and critical, you know, choice making. And we want to see a Bahamas that fulfills its destiny and is optimized. And the only way to do that is to engage it with everybody. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, yep, online, just a quick comment before you guys go. You guys are doing great. Keep it up. Y'all have a blessed and safe night. Wonderful comment online. Thank you, guys. We're going to go to a quick break. We have another guest that's coming on shortly. I hope he's in. And I want to say thank you for all for the students representing the kids at the university. Thank you so much.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your insure.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to The Doctor Is In, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. I'm here, Dr. D. Archer, Family Medicine Specialist. We were just talking to some lovely university students from the University of Bahamas talking about the vaccine mandates, and they're standing up for their rights. They've decided that this is not going to be a good thing for them. It affects various students in various ways, and they've given their recommendations. So they've done the right thing. They want to continue with the education, and they want the freedom of choice, which we all deserve. The freedom of choice and autonomy to our own bodies is one of the most sacred rights that we could possibly have. And so online, Chad Choi is saying to tell them to be encouraged, and they were very impressive and salute their efforts. Definitely, we all do. Vanessa Colby says, good night. She's watching with us online. We're on Facebook, The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. D. If you're not able to listen to us on Guardian Radio or the Guardian Radio app. We also have an open line tonight, 322-6232, 325-4316. 325-4259. We'll talk about a little bit of everything. And I also have another guest that's come on with me, one of my good friends. He's been here before in different capacities. Sometimes we just talk about, life and liberty, a little bit of politics, not too much. Last time he had written a book, so he's a man of many talents. He's a pastor. And he's one of the people that helped me to kind of get into radio and just, speaking up and talking. So I always look to him. Despite us, we argue, we come back. So we're really, we can't be mad at each other for too long. My good friend, Pastor Glenn Rohl, welcome to the show.
Doc, thank you so much for having me. I rush in. I know you're up against schedule. Thank you for the work that you're doing always. And I didn't get a chance to listen into your students, but I suspect once you engage and have a conversation with them that it's going to be wholesome. And so I'm not surprised to hear the extent to which they thoughtful students. It's once again a demonstration that there's a lot, the next generation have a lot to offer. And the idea that you talk about in terms of freedom to choice is an important part of that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be a fundamental right that seems to be going away today. I don't understand what really is behind it. I know that we have been in crisis, but I think crisis is an opportunity to be innovative and to do something different and to be able to solve problems without putting people in such a position where they have to choose between their rights and their morals and, what they really want. That is what makes good leadership, being able to solve those problems without putting heartache on other people. Mm-hmm. And, we will have rough times and good times, but it's a way that you deal with it that's important. And I would like to see the Bahamas move from a kind of beggar, follow the leader nation into a nation that sets trend. Of what the world should look like. And I think that we have the the capability, the manpower, the resources to do it, because I speak to a lot of brilliant Bahamians every day. So what is holding us back? Now, Glenn, you've taken a new role on, and I usually don't talk any politics, but I know it's important to talk about the third party and independent movement. And you have actually joined in with all of what's going on during this crazy pandemic, and you put yourself in the race.
Well, Doc, thank you so much. And our conversation, for those who would have had an opportunity to listen to us, knows that our conversation is always beyond the mere politics of it. That ours is about how do we inform, how do we educate. And I just want to sort of piggyback a little bit in terms of what you're saying. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity, like you rightfully mentioned, for the Bahamas to carve out its own space. I think you appreciate that one of the words that I've been using for the past year and a half is the word reset. And I do think and still believe, Doc, that the Bahamas having to continue to undergo the COVID-19 global thing, that we were shut in with the view, in my mind, for us to sort of carve our own path, rediscover who we are, get a sense of what nation building really would have been about, and engage the Bahamian population in that way. Because you rightfully said, as an archipelago nation, perhaps we did have and do have the opportunity to really carve out spaces that truly on the other end would serve as a defense mechanism to the spread and et cetera. So all of this in mind is a question of leadership. And I think for me, it is one of the compelling reasons, particularly given the fact that we're in election season, that you should give the Bahamian people an alternative. You should state a case for the direction in which the nation should go. And if I am a little, you did talk about how we row a little, so you know,
yeah.
if I am a little disappointed that you are not a part of that conversation.
Yeah.
So I do believe, Doc, that notwithstanding our experience with both the PLP and the FNN, that an alternative should be that it should not just be I want to oppose the PLP and the FNN, but it should be the advancement of a collection of ideas. What is nation building? What moment are we in? How can we navigate the kind of sober deliberation that I know you're capable of doing? And so I understand you didn't get into all of that mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, this is a lot. I just thought, right, this point in my life, I serve a greater purpose, especially with this pandemic. Being a part of the medical field and being a sobering voice amongst a lot of chaos, I find that, some people have not been very calm. It's a lot of fear-mongering and stuff. And then sometimes you need some people who are just going to be like, hey, let's get back to our roots. Let's look at the science of this all. Let's look at what's happening in the country. And let's do some things differently, even if it doesn't happen right away. People are listening. And, change sometimes is subtle, but it happens over time. So I think it was important for me to kind of stand fast in my profession and be that voice in there. And it would have been clouded by anything political. I also think that we're not quite there in terms of what we really need for leadership. But I do think that it's important for people to have various options. That's a part of democracy. And I love to see third parties, independents, just kind of get in the mix there.
Well, I've always said this to you in the context of thoughtfulness that you bring. You do have an amazing assessment of where the nation is, and I've always found that to be true. But like you said, at the same time, you appreciate, hey, having other options is not a bad thing, even if only for democracy. So when people go around talking about losing $400 and stuff, and I'm saying to myself, yeah, are they serious? I mean, this is not about $400. This is about the preservation of this thing that we have cherished. And Doc, you know this more so now than ever before, because you've been engaged in WTO. right? And you've been engaged to the extent to which the Bahamas is losing its way in terms of our value system, in terms of our sovereignty. All of these things is a part of the national conversation. And so while we are not there yet, I could say this to you. I mean, if Glenroll was successful, and by extension, others, independent third party was successful, you could be assured that the first set of calls would be to the Dr. Archers, to the Dr. Gilbert Morrison, those voices that bring tremendous, tremendous direction, tremendous wisdom concerning how do we get out of this hole to really go into the idea of building a nation building. But that is going to require a sober kind of what I call mature leadership that is not driven by the partisan nature of our politics. And that's one of the other reasons that I thought to get in, because we have to speak a language that takes us beyond our colors, beyond which parties we support, and really begin to tap into the genius of who we are as a people. And you are a reflection of that. You know, that's not just now. You're schooling abroad. There are people, there are Bahamians who, you just was talking to some students. Thank God they're still here. There's some Bahamians who are away, who look and long for a place in which they can come to develop. That wasn't our experience in the early Pendleton days. In the early days, you went away to school being assured that you're going to come back and participate in nation building. And so I do hope that this is the beginning of what that new mindset, that new kind of thinking, that new kind of leadership means.
Definitely. Just kind of looking at your story, Glenn, why not get involved in, you know, major parties? Like, why take a different route?
Doc, people ask me about that, you know. I mean, some of my cousins would say to me, well, Glenn, you have some good ideas, and why don't you just filter through the PLP and the FNM? I had early experience of the Pendleton, and that's one of the reasons I reference him, irrespective of his flaws. I think he, along with the others, had a good appreciation for nation building, whether it be NIB, whether it be defense mechanism, whether it be the development bank. There were these pillars that were critical to the nation building. They understood the extent to which the church was to play a role in nation building. They understood the extent to which the labor force was to play some sort of role, right? I think what has happened over the years, Doc, is that we have seen the PLP and the FNM evolve into something else. And we've also seen the extent to which, persons who do have an ambition for public life, good ideas. I mean, you could go through a litany of names, and either they no longer exist, or their ideas are swallowed up by the dictates of the political party. So what's important for me? Yes, winning is a critical part of that. But I do think that politics and governance is about how do we use ideas to advance nation building. And the extent to which, notwithstanding people vote in a different direction, you're always hoping that maybe one day they would wake up and say, this moment is for us to go on a change, in a total change direction. And I believe this is an opportunity to do that. There's a significant amount of mistrust out there still for the PLP and the FNM. But I do think that's important for us not to cheapen our ideas at the expense of becoming a parliamentarian. I've seen too many parliamentarians lost their own vision, lost their sense of purpose. And rather than change the system that they went in, they became part and party with what is going on. Does that mean that has to always be the case? I love the original PLP ideas. I think it still represents something that we can build on. But maybe I am better served by being on the outside still talking about those things. Now, whether that equated to winning, that's a whole lot of story, but that's what election is about.
Well, you know, I've always been someone who's kind of gone against the grain. So I always love the idea of having, just the underdog in the midst. Challenging it. I'm a David and Goliath type of person. I've always taken on a challenge, so I love to see it. A lot of people talk about, what would an independent or someone from a smaller party bring to the table. How do you think that a presence of having someone different from what we've seen before at the table would do? How much impact do you think is possible?
Well, Doc, let me sort of speak to Carmichael, because it's part of the reason that I entered not only the race, perhaps at a late stage, but particularly Carmichael, right? Because I had many conversations with other third parties and hope that there can be a single entity. And that's almost from a purely political point in terms of if you want to realistically win, that's part of the consideration. So when that did not work out, I was kind of almost at a place where I was considering not to run. And my daughter said, she said, "Dad, if you don't run, I'm not going to vote." And I didn't only hear a voice. I think I heard a voice of a lot of people who have a distrust for government, who have not seen government play a sort of meaningful role. They see government as these almost corrupt type of thing where only the certain privilege are benefit of it. So I understood the degree of it. And she don't get involved in politics, but I just feel that she is talking from her gut. I think she also appreciate that I speak from an advocacy point of view, and she also appreciate the extent of it. I genuinely care about people in that way. So here's what that means for me. In nominating Isaac Carmichael, part of what I long for, Doc, is to see this idea of parliamentarians truly represent the community in which they serve, in terms of ideas, in terms of where they want the policy of that community to go, or policies that are beneficial to that community, in terms of understanding the challenges of those communities. And so I think, in terms of representation, the question for Carmichael and other communities is, can I advance someone merely to put a political interest when those who go to parliament do not reflect our values, our views, our representation? I'm sure no one in Carmichael signed off on this thing where they say 12% VAT is acceptable. They didn't sign off on the idea that it's more worthy to spend $20 million on sidewalk versus the hospital care and stuff like that. And so I think as a third party independent type of person is, how do we recommit ourselves to the people? You know, because we will only win if people really rise above the FNM and PLP and say, I'm looking for that kind of representation. And so that part of the question was answered for me. And then I think I do bring, like you said, a body of service, a body of community service, a body of advocacy that I believe where you have the people backing you, that's going to be a hard force to fight against, right? Even if you find yourself in a minority position in the House of Assembly, because you're not just representing yourself now. That the politicians to be know the extent to which Carmichael, notwithstanding, they may or may not vote for you, support the idea, support what it is that they want. And we just have to ensure that this thing called democracy is fleshed out, not just in terms of vote, but in terms of people really engaging. And part of what I seek to do is to bring in that kind of, whether it be local government, I call it the Board of Governors, that I submit and subject myself to, that would be a reflection of the voices of the people. I think where you begin there, then you can begin to summon, say, people in a unified position, look at the challenges within your community, involve the churches, the various unions, the civic organization, and say, let's look at a way in which we can work together to the building of this community. I do believe Carmichael, as other communities, can be the leading communities as a model, because I think that's what we need at this time. And so that's what I seek to bring, beginning the 17, Doc. I'm believing.
Well, you know, we're going to see what happens ultimately. I'm super neutral. I haven't decided at all what I'm going to do.
Pretty low, Doc, so I
don't know. Okay. I'm sorry. Are you able to hear me now? Are you able to hear me? Are you able to hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I think it was you. But, this is going to be extremely.
I'm not hearing you, Doc.
I think it's you. I think it's you. But I think this is going to be extremely interesting. I think my interest, especially in this, is because of, you know, what's happening right now in terms of the pandemic. and how are we going to have the things in place that are going to make this very, very safe, a safe environment for everyone. I haven't seen any particular plan or strategy that's out there. Things seemed quite chaotic with the early stuff that was happening. And so I would hope that they actually spoke to the health authorities prior as they were putting this all together, such that they had, you know, the proper things in place for it, because this is going to be extremely interesting. We have persons who are in quarantine that are going to be out there on the line. And so we're all going to have to be, you know, very safe and really kind of stick to our precautions and that sort of thing. And I just hope that it's not chaotic, because, you know, this will be the first time we're doing this. We're doing this actually in the peak of a pandemic. And I would like it to go as smoothly as possible, but what I'm seeing is extremely chaotic. And I think what we've seen for the past year or two is just a lot of chaos. And people are hoping for an end of that, you know, and we're looking for more. It's been almost, we're going towards 2 years, and we're almost in the same predicament as we were in the very beginning. Are you feeling that people are responding to something different, Glenn? And you can unmute your mic.
Yeah. People say Bahamians move quietly during election, and we see that particularly over the past 20 years. So you get a sense of what they're thinking when they actually express it in the poll in the kind of massive way that they do. I do genuinely believe people are hopeful for change, you know, and I don't think this just began. I think the mere fact that you would have had elections back and forth, that people were kind of wavering in different direction, whether this evolved into change in the context of third party or independence is yet something out there, but I think a case is being made. I do get the sense on the ground that a number of people are still undecided. A number of people are clearly indicating a sense of weariness in both the PLP and the FNM. Does a multitude of other parties present some sort of a mixed thing for them? I think that's a real question out there. And so people over the course are going to get, they're testing individuals as they come in. Maybe that's part of what I'm hoping. They're testing them in terms of what they bring to the table, in terms of their believability, in terms perhaps of their history of public service, et cetera, et cetera. So you may see in this election a more individual-driven outcome than a party, because a lot of people are not truly, in my mind, excited about, quote-unquote, especially the red or the yellow party in the context of a wave. I don't think people want to go back in that direction. So I join the chorus that, you know, you're going to see other people emerging. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm in the race too, that other people, other voices are going to emerge, who are going to lend itself to what our new parliament looks like.
I don't think people are, you know, interested at all. You know what I mean? I know there's people who are always kind of really interested in politics, and I like politics as a study of it almost in a sense, but the actual politics, you know, I'm still undecided about how much I like the actual, you know, being involved or whatever like that. So it's an interesting dynamic, but I find in a lot of people, and you know, I'm would you call one of the older millennials? You guys lump everybody into the millennial category, but these young people out here aren't millennials. Most of them are Gen Z and all kinds of other stuff, you know. The millennials are in their 30s right now, some in their late 20s and most in their 30s. So we're kind of, you know, you kind of merged us with all the young and up and coming people that are in there, but we're kind of like, you know, we're in there,
But you saying that, Doc, there's no way I could put you and my daughter in the same category, you know? So I see a distinct picture because she fits that millennial
You calling everyone millennial. I'm a millennial. These young people out here are Gen Z, and these 21-year-olds and stuff, they're like Gen Z or whatever like that.
If you're in the 30, what are you, Gen Z?
No, millennials are as old, I think, as 40 right now. That's what I'm trying to get people to understand. So I think it's like late 20s, right up to 40.
Okay, she's in that.
Yeah, you know. And she's probably a later millennial. But like, there's a crew that's already behind us. That's they've got their own thing. Probably like the students that we saw in COB. That's a whole new generation that are going to be out there voting and have their own thoughts on everything and stuff like that. And so we're already into a new generation of adults. The millennial generation of adults, we starting to get little, we getting a little aged us now. I would say that our group and down don't really have that kind of drive for politics. I think possibly more than the generation just before. I'm hearing a lot of people who aren't even going to vote or have no interest in voting. They are just kind of locked out, and they feel like they're locked out of the economy in a sense to what they aspire to be. We were a generation that really, like, a lot of us got educated. A lot of us went off to school, came back thinking, hey, the sky is the limit. And then we realized that there is somewhat of a glass ceiling here. You're not in the right place. You don't know the right people.
And I mean, you're probably one of the sort of last, if I could say, generation in the context, who really long for, because I hear some of you, sir, you long to come back home,
I would say, I had an appreciation for home after leaving. Mm-hmm. And I was still in that hopeful bunch. We had seen our parents kind of do way better than the generation before and had come up. So they were the ones who were probably like in that Pinland era, had come up in the 60s, 70s. And, we came later in the 80s where, things were kind of booming. We had all this, Bahamian was great. All of that stuff, I would say what I'm calling the Gen Zers probably aren't seeing that because they came in a time when it's kind of stagnant sense that they haven't seen the movement. We were able to look at our parents who would say, I grew up on McCullough Corner in a 3-5-4-room house. And, this is where we're living now. I don't think we've seen that shift in what's happening for Bahamians since that generation.
That's what made my daughter's intervention. And I mention it because, sometimes when you keep on having this conversation and you talk, at some point you say, I don't know. I'm not sure the change is going to come, etc. And you want to sit it out because, at the end of the day, you still have to count all the costs as it relates to that. But what you describe is precisely the reason why I think for me, engaging is important because government can play a meaningful role. I shared my story with you before that my mother, they came at a time when the PLP, as we know it, was the hope for the salvation for people who felt downtrodden, etc. And we saw the blossoming of what that looked like in the early Pinland days. We saw the steps toward nation building. And I think for my generation, this is where I could use my little age over you now. I think for my generation, it is important for us to bridge that divide. It is important for us to bring to the table a historical perspective in terms of the potential of this nation. That the Dr. Archers and the Dr. Miles Munro and the Sidney Poitier and those persons, that they're not accidents. That pillars and structures were put in place so that it can be a tool and a significant platform to help build this thing called nation building. So those who traveled felt this sense of citizenship responsibility. the sense of obligation. Say, you know what? My nation lift me up. I have a sense of indebtedness to that nation to help lift each other. That to me what Commonwealth supposed to mean. That to me what sense of community means. And I fear in some way the generations that you speak about not to have that history. Yeah. To just take on this idea as other nations of the earth, you know? That to me is scary. And a part of that is within the context of democracy. And like you rightfully said, it don't only have to be on political platform, but your forum, the church have to engage. Unions have to talk about it so that we can take on the kind of national conversation that trumps our politics to the place where when people do vote, they're more informed, they have a greater sense of where the nation needs to go and a greater sense of the kind of candidates that represent those kind of values. I think we're in that moment when we have to say to the next generation again, we do have a rich history. And if we don't know that, if we don't guard that, if we don't find a way to see where we would have gone, of course, and build again from what was given, I think we're going to end up just going in a reckless manner without any sense of direction. And that's a concern that I would have in terms of where we are at this moment.
If anyone wants to jump in, 322-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. Do you think that independents and third parties can bring something to the table as we look to broaden our democracy? Glenn, why is Carmichael? Why that constituency?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, and I think you also know my acquaintance with Pinewood Garden, right?
Yeah.
And so there's always a hard head type of thing between Carmichael and Pinewood. And that's because I have some history in both of these communities. And so when I got involved with this conversation with, by the way, some 20 other candidates, Michelle Malcolm and the others, I did ask whether Carmichael or Pinewood was open for the very idea that I do think that a community is better served when there is a kind of tie, kind of bondment, kind of identification. Because I don't think policy should just be pulled out of the air. I think policy should be a reflection of what people go through every other day of their lives. So for an example, in Carmichael, where I have to come out of my house every day, and as soon as I come out, I'm meeting traffic, I would probably consider, at least as an idea to the residents of Carmichael, to say, man, could 20 million help us broaden the road rather than putting sidewalk? Because, you know, most people jump in their car anyhow, you know?
People don't even walk on these sidewalks.
So
$20 million worth of cement.
So I may say, boy, you know, you have all that, we have that space in the middle. Maybe we can look at a three-way lane for Carmichael. So in the mornings, going a certain way, it's two-way, and in the evening, coming a certain way, you know, I'm those type of thinking. You know, I could think of Carmichael in the context of, man.
Because you live there and you're a part of the community.
I'm a part of the experience.
I don't like driving, Carmichael. You know, I do house calls, so I have to jump in my car. And I enjoy doing that because I don't like to be sitting in the office all the time. So I enjoy going out and doing those things. But whenever I go out, Carmichael, any time of day, doesn't matter what time of day it is, I always seem to buck some traffic. I like to be on time, and I be looking at my watch, and I'm telling the patient or the client, you know, like, give me 5 more minutes. And I feel so bad because I don't know what I'm going to get up to. No matter how early I try to get out there, Carmichael seems to always have some I don't know, it's just busy out there. It's busy.
And this, the doc who knows calmness is important to your health, well-being, you know, less anxiety and all of those stuff. So imagine you coming to your house and the first thing you meet is a line of traffic and you ain't seen no anything. So the point of making is that what we have seen is the extent to which representation void of real experience does not lend itself, right? Here is a challenge that I think we have all succumbed to. politics over the past few years have boiled down to my mind one thing: contracts. You know, so if you do some things in the park, etc., we have parks, for example, that the experience can be fundamentally different. If as simple as Wi-Fi, as simple as those things. So I believe when you're part of a community and your ear is always open to the challenges of that community, then if you have a heart to serve, you will then endeavor, whether it be by way of private sponsorship or by way of governmental resources or by way of collectively saying to the church and the other institutions, hey, we got to give back. You're part of this development process.
And, you know? And that is so important. You know, I've had extremely wealthy people say that they are willing to give money to the government. I proposed to a particular minister, I won't say exactly who it is, but to a plan to get $1 billion to stimulate a particular area. And, you know, you get a lot of, you know, whatever, but, you know, there's a lot of people who are willing to give if it's going to the community, if it's going to the government, and they think that it's going to enhance something. I would have loved to have seen a new hospital. And the fact that those things are not maybe so important to certain people was really, really kind of disheartening for me, you know.
All I could say, I don't want to go and make any promise, but stand by your phone on the night of the 16th.
I would love to see it.
I know that your kind of leadership is critical to what this new direction looks like. And that domain, being a politician, that means politicians have to first appreciate that we have significant mind power, significant people out there who bring something to the table. And the extent to which the policies are directed by that kind of thinking, I believe, is what the nation needs within the context of how do we move forward, how do we get beyond this stagnant place, this place that if tourism, for example, shut down, my God, we feel we got to open the borders right away because we don't have any other means. All of these, to me, are missed opportunities.
Yes.
And I think crisis, man, how do I look at this situation and see new possibilities, right? People talk about the natural resources and other stuff like that. But you're an advocate for wholesome medicine, for an example. The Bahamas has a history where these things, when you had your restaurant but up the road, I mean, you couldn't find no soda in there, right? But you found sour sub tea you see? So
right.
this is a medical doctor who, notwithstanding a study, understand that our history is such that we have some benefits that can be derived from what we grow within our own land, within our own backyard.
Oh, and, definitely. Science starts in the backyard.
Yeah.
You know?
And we don't hear this type of conversation. So I just think that the 16th should be about how do we begin afresh? How do we look within? And so Carmichael, I'm saying to Carmichael, let's look within leadership, but not blindly look. Here is a body of work. Here is a set of ideals that we can collectively throw ourselves around. You definitely need a seat at the table, and as an extension of that, and the extent to which in this moment we can be mortal. Let's say they call us City 2000. Then let's carve out what that means in terms of our green space. Let's carve out what that means in terms of a sporting facility. Carmichael has park space, but imagine to the little boy and the little girl who saw, for an example, the Shanae Miller and those doing track and field. Imagine within your own backyard a 100 meters track that people could go and practice on. Then you can project from that 6 years or 8 years down the road, so to speak, the Bahamas stands to compete because you have the kind of infrastructure. You have the kind of means and resources, and like you rightfully said, this don't have to always go through government. If people see properly structured, properly organized civic organizations within, I would think it behooves the member of parliament a benefit to say redirect resources through these means. You know, Let them take that on so that I can give focus to the kind of policy that will ensure, whether it be incentives as a return as a means, or whether it means if you make certain kind of investment in this area, here's where me, you, and Donald Trump all agree that Carmichael should be seen and considered as a tax-free.
Yeah.
Right? Tax-free.
See now, Donald Trump would have said that you're an inner city community and you deserve some tax breaks and some money for some small business development.
Exactly. You understand what I'm saying? So you can imagine having alongside that soft bank loans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of development thing within it. You have it in your own local government thing. So you're determining right off the bat the kind of businesses you want in the area. You know, you're sort of protecting the zone from what I call this corrupt, greedy capitalistic system. So you got in all of those things. But you don't have to, you could predict that Carmichael would be not only the new city, but if you want to reference it, where it becomes the kind of Bay Street that, you know, here is where we started. But here is where we look at in terms of empowerment, etc. And you could spread the area in that way. I just learned today, for an example, and you do history more than me, that the very idea of Carmichael deals with governorship, deals with the liberation of slaves.
The governor, he was one of the substantial ones that stood up a lot for his slaves during the time period.
So the spirit over this community is a sense of liberation. It's a sense of freedom.
And it speaks to a lot, right? Because, you know, the fact that we don't even teach our history, we just say, hey, Carmichael, who's this guy? We don't know who he is, some white guy from the past. But we don't know how he influenced the Bahamas that we see today and how we led that way. And, you know, that's why I study history. It's strange. They think I'm, most people think I'm a bit of an anomaly because I'm a well-rounded doctor. I love history. I love economics, and I guess I have a philosophical side to me as well.
I do have two hats for you, right? I do see you and others almost on the phone the very night and say, hey, carve out for us a blueprint to beat this pandemic, right? In a very national way, right? And that include even the Dwayne Sands of the world, because we have to rise above politics, right? In that context. But I do see you flying around with the Gilbert Morrises of the world to say, and here is an economic blueprint in which the Bahamas represent going forward.
It's all intertwined.
Yeah.
It's all intertwined. Health, education, economics, it's all intertwined, and your history gives you kind of something to look back at and decide what worked, what didn't work, what was helpful, and how did we get here? And it gives you a reference. So if you're not the type of person to think about the nuances of all these things and how they work together, it's very difficult to see, and it's what we've had a problem with in terms of moving forward in the country. Because we have a lot of people who only see one block at a time. What we need to do is to bring together the people who are thinking about everything and be able to overlap all of that into a proper plan and strategy.
If someone were to ask me one area of, I wouldn't say concern, but one of the things in my many discussion with the other groups and third parties, and again, all of us share the space, so I'm sure different people bring different things, is the extent to which we even pick up the idea of nation building without having an appreciation for history, for points of reference. Where did we go? What did it entail? Because if you don't do that, then you could, in my mind, falsely just come up with this idea, well, we want Republican versus this type of system, right? Mm-hmm. And the truth is that they may not in and of itself bring solution if you don't know the extent of it. You can yet still look at things even within the system and with good governance, et cetera, really, really advance the nation in terms of its own development. And some of these things I learned from you. You had to say to me, hey, Glenn, I mean, if some things about this system really can help advance our democracy, but people just abuse it. Members of Parliament.
We had the talk, you know, because Glenn was on the way to being a socialist. I had to pull him back a little bit.
I'm telling you, I'm almost still there, Doc. I had to try
and pull him back just a little bit, you know. what we need is responsible capitalism, right? Because when you go too far into socialism, you have government expanding and working with corporate America. And people are thinking that that's capitalism, but it's actually not. It's closer to socialism. What you want is to have an environment where people have the opportunity to thrive, right? And we don't get that on either extreme of it. You need kind of this very balanced approach where you have your social safety nets for the people who fall through the gap. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, people have the opportunity to do the things that are fulfilling for their life, for their financial success, and nothing is really stopping them.
So just so you would know that me subjecting myself as a student in those areas that it didn't fall on deaf ear, the very idea of this economic free or trade zone is to sort of lay a foundation upon which you can begin to deliberately set on course to say, well, okay, through this entrepreneur spirit, through this sense of self-empowerment, right, we're going to be able to look within the Carmichael community. And part of that may be have to come by way of cooperatives. Part of that may be able to say, hey, community, each of you develop your own cooperative, advance some ideas. All right, what does that mean? That means each one have an investment in their own thing. And for people who may need to chime in their $10 or $15 in a much broader pool, but all of it's a part of the process. But like you rightfully said, it is to give these people a sense of ownership, a sense of empowerment.
So just like that, you know, the show is an hour and a half and we always run out of time, Glenn. Let everybody know what your group is called, what you want them to do. How do they find you if they have questions? I know there isn't a lot of time, but, you know, here's another option. Just give that to us before we wrap up. You got 30 seconds.
But we're making the case where we can door to door. We also within the social media. So if you go to Glenn Pirol on Facebook, the Grand Commonwealth Party. And there, like I said, there are others who have shared similar thoughts with me. I'm in the Carmichael constituency. My WhatsApp number is 449-8000. And please feel free. We do have a little flyer card that we're giving out. We're going to be on Fate Avenue tomorrow for cars passing by. As you know, Doc, we weren't able to get to all of the houses, but we're going to do the best we can within the coming days. And thank you for this opportunity. It is always my pleasure to have this conversation with you, and I look forward to having more as we go around. Stand by your phone now, Doc.
Okay, awesome. That's Glenn P. Rule. He's going for Carmichael. You heard what he had to say. He sounds very grounded. He has a plan. And so, you know, there are options out there, everybody, you know. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Glenn, for taking out the time to be with us tonight. Brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. And we'll see you all next week with me, Dr. D. Archer, on The Doctors. And good night, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Doc. Appreciate it. All the best to your family.
All right. Good night.
Good night.